The trend in the 1990s was to build more prisons and impose mandatory sentences for a wide range of crimes, especially drug violations. That has now led to a severe overcrowding in state prisons. Former Chief Judge of the McLean County Circuit Court, Elizabeth Robb, is a member of the Governor's Commission that looked into this issue. The commission recently made 27 recommendations, but is the goal mainly to cut costs or actually reform the system?
I think the research shows that putting more people in prison and for longer periods of time does not deter crime, which was the hope. I think for a lot of these sentences and laws back in the 90s. And in fact, putting certain kinds of folks in prison probably makes them more likely to recidivate and commit further crimes.
In general, the bulk of the recommendations call for reducing sentences.
Yes.
Would these sentence reductions apply only to people arrested in the future, or would they be retroactive? Would they affect people currently in prison?
For example, the recommendation that would allow folks who are serving 75%, 85% of their sentences would allow them to receive some good time credit. So their sentences would be reduced by that. But most of these recommendations are looking forward.
Relating to what happened, say, in the 1980s with mentally ill patients, where there was this movement to take them out of institutions because it was costly, but then there were not the community supports.
Right.
Programs were not funded sufficiently to help the people, and so we had mentally ill people all over the streets. How can we ensure this won't happen with the prison population?
Folks who are released from prison, for the most part, are going to be on a mandatory supervised release period. One of our strong recommendations, and the Department of Corrections has really been making some great strides in the last several years, assessing folks for the risk that they pose to the community and assessing them for what they need insofar as changing their behaviors. So if we are assessing folks when they're incarcerated and providing them the services that they need in order to be successful when they're released, and assessing who's more at risk, and if they're more at risk, putting more supervision in place for those folks. The expectation is that when you release folks from prison back into the community, that you have the proper support and supervision in place so that they aren't just roaming the streets and committing more offenses.
It's estimated that about half of the people who come out of prison are rearrested and then return to prison within 3 years.
Well, part of the reason is because right now, when they are incarcerated, there is very little in the way of services being provided to them to change their behaviors. Because the prisons are so overcrowded and because of the budgetary situations, they're being warehoused. They're not being offered opportunities to learn or to acquire skills so that when they're released, they can get a job and support themselves and their families. A lot of our recommendations deal with making certain that when they are incarcerated, that they are being provided the services they need in order to be released and productive.
Talk about what you think are some of the main recommendations.
You know, there are certain zip codes and neighborhoods, many of these are from the urban areas, where most of the folks come from who are incarcerated, and they go back to these communities when they're released. And so put your resources, put your funding in those communities. So when folks are released and go back to these neighborhoods, there's that support system in place. So if a person comes back to his neighborhood and he needs housing and he needs some education, he needs a job, he needs transportation, put those resources right there so he can be successful.
One of the recommendations that jumped out at me was to allow people who are now prohibited from certain jobs because they have to have a license.
Yeah.
What are some of the things that people cannot work at when they come out of prison now?
Cosmetician, barber. There's like 125 licenses that we recommended that a task force be established to really look at those to determine what's the reason for this? Hair braiding. You can't have a criminal conviction to do hair braiding. I don't understand why. And the other irony was that folks in prison were able to go to classes to learn how to be a barber. Why? Because when they're released, they can't be a barber. They can't get that license.
There are a number of recommendations, or a few at least, that deal with drug convictions. And one of the reasons there are so many people in jail are drug charges.
Right.
Possession of a half an ounce of cocaine, for example, is a class X felony, right, if I'm not mistaken, which is on a par with murder.
Right. The drug offenses. I mean, this goes back to the 90s again, the war on drugs and really punitive sentences for possession of small amounts of controlled substances. And we've learned that long sentences are not effective. They aren't a deterrent. And so wanting to really kind of right-size those sentences. And the other thing, as you pointed out, that a lot of these sentences are more severe for possessing drugs than for violent crimes. And that doesn't seem to be logical either.
Do you think, though, that you will get some pushback from people who are concerned about law and order, particularly given the tenor of our country right now?
There is a lot of bipartisan support for these types of recommendations. I think whether you're on the right or the left, if you find out that a long prison sentence is ineffective as serving as a deterrent, you might be interested in finding out what is an effective deterrent. The other thing is, most folks are released eventually back into the community. We think that most citizens would like to have folks released back into the community who have a much more likely opportunity to be law-abiding and productive as opposed to recidivating. And so if you say, you know, folks are going to be released back into the community, give the community the resources in order to change behaviors of these folks. And that seems to be accepted on both sides of the aisle, so to speak.
Another of the recommendations has to do with creating greater training among law enforcement officers in racial bias and ethnic bias.
Right.
That's important because of makeup of the prison population.
Correct. Yes, it is. I mean, it's disproportionately made up of black and brown individuals. And we've recommended that data be collected from the first time there's an interaction between a police officer and the individual on the street all the way through to the time one serves in prison and on parole. We've got to be looking at those data points to see where along the spectrum are these disproportionate treatment of individuals going on.
8 times as many African Americans are incarcerated as white Americans,
right,
and the number is twice as many for Hispanic Americans. There may be something going on other than African Americans are committing more crime.
Yeah. We know that that's not the case. We know that there is implicit bias. All of us have it, and we need a lot better training for everyone involved in the criminal justice system to overcome that.
Some of these sentences, though, were mandated by the legislature to begin with. The judge does not have any choice,
right,
but to impose that sentence. Are you recommending then that the legislature go back and re-legislate some of these laws?
Yes, because when you look at the individual and you hear the aggravating factors and the mitigating factors and you get the whole criminal history and you learn about what this individual has done or hasn't done, we believe judges are in a much better position than a legislature is to craft an appropriate sentence for that individual.
Recommendation I thought you might get some pushback on is one that reduces the amount of distance you have to be from a school if you're caught selling drugs,
right,
from 1,000 feet to 500
right,
feet. It seems to me parents might get involved in that one.
What we did provide for was that the state's attorney needed to show what the nexus was. If drugs are being sold at 2 o'clock in the morning and there are no children in the area, then why should that be an enhanced crime? If it's 2 in the afternoon and they're recruiting kids to buy drugs, that's the nexus that could allow for an enhancement on this sentence. These specific laws related to drugs being sold near schools or churches or near public housing, these are also very disproportionately disadvantage black and brown folks. We know that. And in urban areas. because there are so many, you know, storefront churches or daycare centers, and it's a very dense area and an urban area. And so, you know, you cannot go to many areas in a city and not be within 1,000 feet of one of those designated places.
And that's something I hadn't thought of, that this is a reason why there may be a lot more drug arrests in African-American or minority neighborhoods.
Yes. We looked at that for a long time, and it was highlighted particularly by some of the legislators from the Chicago urban areas that this was very disproportionately used in the Black and brown communities.
What kind of offenders do you see remaining in prison with the longer sentences?
We have not touched the gun offenses because obviously we have still, unfortunately, and particularly in urban areas, we have a lot of crime around guns.
So anybody who uses a gun in the commission of a crime
is going to serve a long sentence. And very serious violent offenses, murder, sexual assault, things like that. We haven't touched.
We hear a lot in these recommendations about the inmate, the prisoner. What about the victim?
Right. I can tell you that we heard from numbers of victims. I mean, all of these were public hearings that we held, and we probably have a 3-foot stack of information provided by folks, all types of individuals involved in the criminal justice system. But some of the reasons, for example, why we did not make some of these recommendations retroactive to those serving time already in prison is because of the effect on victims. You know, victims, when a person is sentenced for an offense, the victim understands this individual who harmed me or my family has been sentenced to 25 years. And that's a way of coming to terms with a horrendous event in a person's life. And so if you then go and say, well, no, it's not going to be 25 years, it's going to be 17, that just brings it up again for a victim. And we heard that from victims time and time again. We need finality. We need to know that this person who harmed our family, we need to know that that person's going to be in a place where he or she can't harm us again for a certain period of time. So I think we listen to the victims. However, I will say many victims time and time again came in to our meetings and said, don't just sentence a person to a certain number of years in prison without providing that person the opportunity to be rehabilitated. We know they're going to be released in the community in the future, and we want to see that person's changed. So help them do that.
We've been talking with Elizabeth Robb. She's the former chief judge of the McLean County Circuit Court. She's also a member of the Governor's Commission on Criminal Justice and Sentencing Reform. Thanks so much for talking about all of these issues with us.
It's my pleasure. Thank you, Judy.
I'm Judy Valente.